2021 has been a big year for hackers, especially those who take people's data and hold it ransom. One estimate says ransoms totaled $20 billion this year. And one of the biggest cases was the Colonial Pipeline, a critical gas and diesel pipeline that was hacked and shut down. But we've also seen some counter-hackers score a win or two against the bad guys. So let's break down a busy year in cybersecurity with Nicole Prohroth. She covered the topic for the New York Times for a decade, and now she advises the Cybersecurity Agency at the Department of Homeland Security. Her book is This Is How They Tell Me the World Ends. Nicole, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me, Scott.
Okay, let's talk about 2021. Colonial Pipeline, a lot of us remember. It opened our eyes to attacks not just on data, but on our physical infrastructure. This is what the pros call a ransomware attack. So kind of for the rest of us, how did it work?
So Colonial Pipeline was really, I think, Americans' first real glimpse into just how vulnerable America's critical infrastructure is. And what happened in that attack, it is interesting because it wasn't rocket science. What happened was Colonial Pipeline, a company no one had really ever heard of until this summer, controls the major pipeline for the Eastern Seaboard of the United States. They were hit by a ransomware attack. So cyber criminals actually found out that they had a weak spot. They'd forgotten to deactivate an old employee's account. So all they needed to do was use a stolen password to break into Colonial Pipeline's network and hijack their employee network. So what's interesting, though, is that their billing systems were shut down. They couldn't access any of their billing systems. And without being able to bill customers, they really had no way of charging customers downstream. And they're a business. So they took this preemptive step of shutting down the pipeline itself. And what happened next, most of us will remember, we saw panic buying at the gas pump. We saw nonstop flights get grounded. And actually, my colleague and I at the New York Times, David Sanger, got our hands on a Department of Energy assessment that determined that as a country, we could have only afforded a couple more days of downtime from that attack. And really, vulnerability was with the lack of diesel. Without diesel, refineries can't function. And that pipeline was a major conduit for diesel. So it really exposed just how vulnerable the country is to cyber attacks.
Yeah, well, and your book goes into this broader question of critical infrastructure, right? This is hackers, threat actors, whether they're governments or others, being able to go after other countries' infrastructure, power plants, clean water supplies, etc. And you, in your book, blame the U.S. government to some degree for starting this. What do you mean?
Well, I think for decades, the U.S. basically exploited a first mover advantage. You know, the America very quickly, intelligence agencies here realized that as we baked more and more software into critical systems, into organizations, into our economy, this created valuable intelligence opportunities, counterintelligence opportunities. You know, if they found a hole in Microsoft Windows software, which is ubiquitous, intelligence agencies' first instinct wasn't to call up Microsoft and say, hey, make sure you patch this hole. It was, maybe we should hold on to this and see
how do we
kind
of weaponize what we found.
Yes. And so for a long time, there was this big overemphasis on offense, on espionage. And in the process, we sort of left these systems more vulnerable. And what we've seen in 2021, I think, is this de-emphasis of cyber defense really coming home to roost. You know, you're just seeing organizations left and right, government agencies, state and local agencies, hospitals, pipelines, water treatment facilities get hacked because they have not adequately invested in defense. And because I think until now, and really until this administration, we haven't made cyber defense a priority.
And in some cases, I guess they're regular listener might think that these threat actors are all kind of highly trained and they need these kind of super secret, highly technical ways to get in. But in some cases, it doesn't take that, right? In some cases, I don't know, garden variety, garage cyber crooks can find these vulnerabilities and just hack into organizations. Is that the reality?
That's the reality. Yeah, it's really easy. And they don't even need to go find a vulnerability in Microsoft Windows or your iOS software. These days, so many organizations fail to protect our data. So many of us keep reusing the same passwords across different sites. You know, the other hack that really was disturbing this year, police in Florida, in this town just outside Tampa, right before Super Bowl weekend, announced that hackers had gotten into a water treatment facility there. And because of a lack of two-factor authentication, and because this water treatment plant was using a decade-old version of Windows software that they couldn't even get patched for if they wanted to, the hackers were able to move over to the chemical controls and up the level of lye in the water, that's L-Y-E, the chemical, to the point where they could have badly poisoned the entire population of this town just outside Tampa before the Super Bowl in Tampa. And thank God some engineer happened to be at their computer screen and saw their cursor move over with a phantom hand over to the chemical controls and were able to catch it in time. But that is the attack that really scares me. And when you think about our water supply in the United States, and if you just stop your car next time you pull up to a water treatment facility and ask yourself, do we think that there is an IT guy on staff there? Or do we think there's a trained cybersecurity engineer who understands these threats on staff? The answer will always be no. And so we really have to fix that problem.
Well, Nicole, I'm searching for a little shred of good news in all of this. Okay. I don't know where it is, but let me give this a try. I did read over the past year that I think in at least one of these ransomware attacks, there were these, I guess, so-called good guy hackers hacked the hackers and then retrieved some of the ransomware money back. I mean, does that count as a little bit of...
Yes, that does count. That does count, yes. So earlier this year, the Department of Justice and the FBI announced that they were able to successfully claw back some of the ransom. I think it was a little over $2 million of the $4.4 million that Colonial Pipeline paid to the Russian ransomware group that held their networks hostage. And you know, that is a piece of good news that should be celebrated. I think the question is that scalable? You know, because we're not seeing that happen with every ransomware attack, and these are happening all of the time. And so the question is, you know, what more can we do? And I think a piece of good news is, listen, you know, no one was doing anything about ransomware over the past 4 years. You know, these ransomware attacks were just getting worse and worse and worse. And people were saying, oh, please let this get better. But no one was really doing anything about it. Now, DOJ has a ransomware task force. We've seen a couple, not many, but a couple Russian ransomware groups raise their own white flags and say, you know, we're going to shut down and go quiet for a while, although it's unclear whether they're just going to come back and rebrand as they often do. So we're throwing spaghetti at the wall. You know, for years we weren't doing anything, but now we're throwing spaghetti at the wall and we're seeing what sticks and we're trying to come up with a coherent deterrent strategy. But it's really hard. And I think one thing people don't understand is that when it comes to cyber threats, there's really only so much that the United States government can do. Particularly in regards to our critical infrastructure, because the big stat that gets thrown around is that the vast majority, 85% of America's critical infrastructure, so our dams, our water treatment facilities, our power grid, our pipelines, our transportation systems, our nuclear plants, are owned, operated by the private sector, and they have no requirement whatsoever to secure their networks. And anytime we try to get any kind of bill passed that would say, hey, just make sure you're using two-factor authentication or make sure you're patching your systems or not using a decade-old version of Windows, it always gets killed by lobbyists. So there was a Biden executive order that said, listen, okay, we can't control what the private sector does, but we do have some control over contractors, government contractors. So they've said, hey, you know, we'll come up with these standards. You can even self-certify that you meet these standards. But if we catch you lying to us, which we probably will, because you're probably going to get hit by a ransomware attack, you are banned from ever doing business with the federal government again. And so that's the first stick we've really seen in this space ever, period.
Well, that's a good place to end it. A little bit of potential optimism here. Mm-hmm. Nicole Perlroth is an advisor to the Department of Homeland Security, and she covered cybersecurity for the New York Times for a decade. Nicole, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Scott. Great to be here.